Isn't it time you lived life on your own terms? If not now, when? Visit abrilliantgamble.com for more information on Blair's new exciting online coaching program. Midlife doesn't have to be a crisis. It's a time to rethink who you are and what you really want from your work, your life, and yourself. Sacrificing your soul stops here. It's time to make some plans, make them happen, and live the life you deserve. With interviews, stories from her own adventures, and expert insights, here's your host, best-selling author, speaker, and coach, Blair Palmer.
Hello and welcome to episode 109 of A Brilliant Gamble, the podcast. I hope you're really well. We got our chickens. We went yesterday. We were going to go last week, but the snow slightly put paid to those plans. It's a little bit too dangerous to go so far to collect them. But we went yesterday and picked up our 10 beautiful hens, and they're now outside in their huge area, pecking the ground and scratching about, and oh my goodness, it's so fantastic. And actually, they had been here no more than 20 minutes before one of them laid a beautiful blue egg. So what a lovely way to start our hen adventure. Anyway, the main reason I'm telling you about this is because, you know, whatever it is that you want to do, no matter how crazy it might sound to other people, if you take the actions and you get your own self out of the way, then you can make it happen. There really is very little in this world that you want to do, as long as that thing comes from a deep sense of calling or of being in alignment with your values, and you know that it's something you would love and you would be good at. As long as it meets those criteria, there is really no reason why you can't make it happen. And I know that getting hens isn't really up there in terms of, you know, the massive things that you could do in your life. But I'll tell you, it's not always the massive things that bring you a great sense of enjoyment and warmth and fulfillment. Sometimes it's the little things. Anyway, this week we've got an amazing guest for you. We are getting into the nitty gritty. Now, I've just touched on it there actually. There are two kinds of obstacles to doing work you love for a living and loving the way you live. There are the practical obstacles. This is knowing what to do and how to do it. And the emotional or mindset obstacles. This is all the ways you get in your own way. And there's really only those two things. There are practical obstacles and there are emotional or mindset obstacles. And making it happen really requires taking care of both of these. If you don't know what to do or how to do it, you won't get very far. But even when you do know what to do and how to do it, you may still not actually get it done. There's a big difference between knowing and doing. More and more, I'm speaking to people who are making a living doing what they love, and they're going to share with us the details, how they left their job, how they started their business or their new venture, whatever that was, how they evolved from the early days, the lessons they'd learned, and the obstacles of both kinds that they have had to overcome. So many people want to write for a living. And as you'll remember from the interview I did with Tom McLaughlin, that was episode 85, if you want to go back to it, it's not an escape route with a clear career path. Writing for money covers a huge spectrum from being paid to blog to being an award-winning author or screenwriter and every other thing you can think of in between. My guest this week is not only a hugely successful writer in her own right, but her business is all about helping other people to make a living from writing. So she's the perfect person to talk about how to create an income stream from the written word. Joanna Penn is an award-winning entrepreneur, a hugely successful fiction and non-fiction author, a podcaster and a teacher who left her corporate career a decade ago to start writing for a living. In our interview, we talk about the journey from 9 to 5 to the multifaceted business she has today, how she organizes herself, what she outsources, where the money actually comes from, and the truth about what it takes to really make a living from writing. And there's no Garrett in sight. This is not about being poverty stricken. She's making a very good living and she'll tell us how. You don't have to be an aspiring writer to get a lot from our conversation today. Joanna's work ethic and her focus on creating assets applies whatever your field. So let's go to the interview. Joanna, how are you? So good to have you on the show.
Oh, well, thanks for having me, Blair. I'm really happy to be here.
The reason that you're on the show is because not only do you make a living doing something that so many of us fantasize about and you know, waste a lot of time dreaming about, but you also help other people to do the same, and that is writing. But you haven't always been a writer, have you? So you started life in a much more, shall we say, mundane kind of working career?
So I left university, like many people, with some debt and was like, what's a job I can get that's going to pay me decent wage? So I went into management consulting, even though my degree was in theology. And of course, management consulting. And then I ended up implementing accounts payable systems around Europe and then Asia Pacific. So it's one of those jobs like, you know, your parents are really proud and you can buy your house and you have a nice business card and you get nice business travel and all that. And then you wake up like 10 years later and go, what just happened to my life? I went through that a number of times and I started other businesses. I started a scuba diving business in New Zealand. I did property investment. And then eventually I was just like, I have to change my life. I was at a point where I was crying every day at my job. And it wasn't so much the job, it was my emptiness and my disappointment that even though I had supposedly what you're meant to have, you know, the six-figure job and everything, it was golden handcuffs. It was, how do I change my life? And going, what have I got to show for my life? And so that was, of course, as we talk, that kind of pivot point was about 13 years ago. So I'm sure we'll get into some more detail, but I really had hit that point of all I'm doing is working super big hours. And I know you understand this from your history. Working super big hours, I'm exhausted, I'm burned out. I was on like taking caffeine tablets and painkillers for headaches and back pain and stress. I was overweight, significantly overweight. But mostly I just felt completely pointless. So yeah, that was the kind of pivot point.
I think a lot of that, I mean, when we hear it expressed like that, it sounds pretty extreme. And yet, I'm sure that most of us, I mean, when I think back on my BBC career and people who are still working in the corporate world that are listening to this, you know, it creeps up on you, doesn't it? So you manage it pretty well and then the pressure increases and then you start to medicate, whether it's coffee or whether it's caffeine tablets, which is a step up from there, or just, you know, caffeine on a drip or whatever it might be. But and then the health issues, which I think so many people today seem to suffer from, stomach problems, headaches, migraines, that kind of thing, back pain, various kinds of joint pain. And yet we don't necessarily associate it with our work because we're quite effective at work. We're doing a really good job. And as you were, right? You were
successful. Yeah. I was doing a great job. I was a good consultant doing a good job, but I think it was that lack of meaning. And now, and I kind of just sat down one day. Well, no, I did it a lot. Like over the year, I felt that almost immediately in starting that job. And I kept resigning. I went traveling. I did a lot of traveling. You know, I would resign, go traveling for 6 months, run out of money, go back. And I would just do that over and over again. And until I was like, I have to do something to actually work towards a change in my daily life. Because I think it's Seth Godin, who the great marketing author, who said, you know, create a life you don't want to escape from. And that really made a big difference to me. It was like, yeah, I want my daily life and my work, because I love working, you know, I enjoy my working and achieving things and having things in the world. So I knew I wanted to work. I don't just want to sit around and watch TV. Most people don't, you know, we want to achieve something, but it's like, well, what is worth doing? And around then, Tim Ferriss's 4-Hour Work Week came out, Gary Vaynerchuk, Crush It, which was all about like doing what you love. And those personalities are not really my personality, but their books, you know, at that time helped. And also Jack Canfield, The Success Principles, all about from go from where you are to where you want to be. And I still love those books, but essentially I wrote down, well, what do I want my life to look like? And I realized that what I really enjoyed was reading. Like, I've always been a massive reader. I was like, okay, I want to read and I want to travel. Those are the two big things I want in my life, books and travel. And then I've always been a journaler. So I've always written journals and I like self-help. And I thought, you know what, I could just be a self-help writer, speaker, like British Tony Robbins, introvert British Tony Robbins. So that's kind of what I came up with in my head. And then, of course, it's about taking action towards where you want to go. And then later on, I started writing fiction, and it's all kind of gone from there. I did just want to say on health, I actually co-wrote a book with a medical doctor a couple of years ago now called The Healthy Writer, because amusingly, all of the stress and pain problems can still exist if you're doing your dream job. So yes, you still have to do your maintenance, but yeah. If you love what you're doing, it helps.
Listeners to this show will know that I have had a problem with workaholism, and even running my own business, you know, it's very easy to get caught up in the more I do, the harder I work, the more hours I sit here staring at this screen or bashing the phone, the more successful I'm going to be. And I've actually, we were having a chat just before I pressed record about how hardworking you are and how much you get done in a day. And I was thinking, wow, I just don't get that much done and all that. But I mean, one of the reasons is that I have made a choice to say, actually, the times when I've been killing myself for work haven't necessarily resulted in great success. You can still be very unwell, both physically and emotionally, just even when you work for yourself, I think.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But it's interesting because I think I'm actually, as we talk, I'm just finalizing a mini course on productivity, because I have really turned a corner in the last year around productivity, in that I have become a lot better at saying no. And this is always a problem for people. You know, I think people pleasers, maybe women in particular, struggle with saying no. And I made some decisions last year around it's saying no to the great opportunities, even, you know, it's easy to say no to difficult things and things you don't want to do, but saying no to speaking all around the world, I used to do a lot of that and now I don't. And so for me, and I've got it on my wall, is I measure my life by what I create. And being very specific about the time I spend every day has a time block for creation. So, and for me, obviously I have 28 books now and I measure my life by those books. So I work towards creating those intellectual property assets, which I know put income in my pocket as a scalable form, as in I create them once and they make me money, hopefully the whole of my life and 70 years after I die. So this is kind of the magic of saying no to things that might be short-term income and yes to things that are creating assets, which will make us income so we can take more time off, which is fun. I mean, most of my time off is spent researching my fiction because I travel a lot for that. But that's probably been the biggest thing for me, has been like, I need to say no to things so that I have more time to create. So that's been my big learning this in the last year.
This is fascinating because, I mean, I want to come back to how you got out of your corporate life in a minute. But as we're on this, the way you talk about writing and writing as a business may be a little bit of a contrast for people compared with what they might imagine a writer talking about. But I think this is really important because we're talking about, can you make a living doing what you love? Now, you can do what you love and make a living doing something else. Mm. If you want to make a living doing the thing you love, it sounds to me, from what you're saying, you've got to treat it like you're in business.
Well, you are. As I said, I come from corporate world where I was used to a good income. I was not going to become a poor author in a garret. So this is a mindset difference, I think. Like I said, I have 28 books. It is a myth that you can write one book and become a millionaire and live happily ever after. It just doesn't happen. I mean, very, very rarely, but really. So when I came into this, I think it's how you come into it and what you want to do with your life. I knew that I wanted to leave my job. So my whole approach was, how do I make enough money, good money, so I can leave my job and still have an awesome life rather than leave my job and be penniless. That was never me. I like money. I love creating, but I also like money. I like travel. I like, or you know, the good things. So that was a mindset thing going in, and I was ready and willing to learn what it took to do this full time. And among that, obviously writing faster, spending more hours creating products, but also becoming a publisher and a marketer. Because another little truth about the publishing industry is, if you license your intellectual property rights to a publisher, you are going to get a smaller percentage than if you become a publisher. So I run my own publishing company, I market my own books, so I get 70% royalty, 70% royalty, whereas many authors may get between 7% and 15% to 25% royalty. So it's almost separating your brain. Like I said, I have a chunk of time every day for asset creation, and that is my creative side. I don't care about business or money or anything. I'm creating, I'm in that zone. And then I come back to this desk, which is my work, my desk that I do my business at, and I become the businesswoman, and I do stuff like this. You know, some people might listen, might check out my books. I do email, I do my work with my accountant, my freelancers, and run my business. I think that's where you have to decide what you want and what you're willing to give up. So lots of writers are very happy to pass their manuscript to a publisher and give up the bigger chunk of the money. You just have to make your choices. But now we have so many choices. It literally is the best time in history to be a writer.
Yeah. I mean, I was reading one of your books earlier on in preparation for this, and just the range of options in terms of how you publish, you know, independent versus finding an agent and a publisher, and then the audiobook option and the ebook option, and you know, a physical book in print or something that you can read online. Just a fascinating range of options. At the same time, it seems a little overwhelming. So you have to know about a lot of things, and then you have to make some decisions. In the past, you were a writer. If you wrote, I mean, when my first book was published, I had an agent, so I had written a synopsis, and I sent that synopsis to 30 agents that I got from the Artisan Writers Yearbook, a physical copy of the book that I went through, and I sent them in the post this manuscript, this synopsis. Then a couple of agents came back, and I selected one, and then they found me a publisher. It was a very conventional. I didn't really need to know anything apart from to read that one book, the Artisan Writer's Yearbook, that told me how to write a synopsis, which I did, and I was fortunate enough that worked for me. Today, these options are so broad. Are you finding in the work that you're doing that people are almost using that as an excuse to procrastinate and not get round to really doing, as you call it, the asset creation, just get on and write?
Well, I think this has always happened. I think there's an inevitable stage in every writer's life where you go along to all the writing courses, all the book fairs, you buy all the writing books, you have like 50 books on writing on your shelf, and then you start asking questions about publishing. I get this all the time. People are like, well, should I go with this publisher or should I do this? And I'm like, okay, how's your book? Oh, I've only written 3 chapters. And I'm like, hey, wait up there, just go finish the book and, you know, at least do not think about your publishing options until you have a first draft. Most people never finish a first draft. So if you can get to that point, then awesome. Then you can think about your choices. And of course, the world's changing so fast that your options in another 6 months may be completely different to what they are right now. So that's the first thing. Always write that first draft, and then at least you know what you're writing. You've got that. I know with nonfiction, often people do synopsis and stuff like that, but I still think you're figuring out your own voice when you write. So it can be a really good thing there. People also say now, oh, you should build a platform. You should have a do all this marketing before you even publish. And I'm like, yeah, in a way, like someone like you who does consulting, speaking, that's fair enough. But for an average, your average fiction writer, it's impossible to do that. So I would just say, just get on with writing. So it always does come back to writing. But in terms of, you know, looking at where I am now, like I said, it was 13 years ago, there wasn't even the Kindle or the iPhone then, presumably when you did your first books as well. Yeah, no Kindle, no iPhone. And the world has completely changed with the Kindle and the iPhone. Those things, and podcasting, for example, has completely changed the game. Streaming audiobooks, again, changed the game. So these things, you don't have to learn them all at once. So, you know, people listening, be very aware how long I have been doing this. I published my first book in 2007, 2008. And then I started my blog 10 years ago, my podcast 10 years ago. So you don't have to know everything at once. You can just do this slowly. And I did not go from, I mean, maybe we'll circle back now to how I left, but I didn't go from, oh, I think I'm going to make a lot of money with my writing, to making a lot of money with my writing. There's a few steps along the journey.
So let's do that then. So you're in this unhappy job. You are not well. You realize that there is something you could do that really interests you. How did you make the transition out of corporate world to being a writer full time?
Right. So first of all, it is a decision. I really think a decision is important, because what I did is I opted out of the career ladder, and that is almost a mental shift. It is. I am going to do what I need to do to fulfill the terms of my contract, but no more. So I'm not going to work late. I'm not going to work weekends. I'm not, you know, and eventually I went to 4 days a week as well. So I basically said, I will do my job so I don't get sacked, because I need the money, but that's it. And so what I would do is I would get up at 5 a.m. every morning and I would write. So I'm a morning person. So I would create in the morning, go to my job, do my job, come home. And in the evening, I would be podcasting, learning about everything. So I did lots of online courses about internet marketing and blogging and all of that. So I started my site, The Creative Pen, in December 2008 to kind of catalogue the journey of publishing and writing, and also becoming a speaker. So when you're trying to shift your income, you have to look at short-term money and longer term money. So when I say a book is an intellectual property asset, it will not make you money. If you sit down and write 2,000 words on a novel, you're not going to get paid for that right now. That money will come in the future, but you can't just guarantee that. Whereas I was like, okay, if I want to give up my job, I need immediate money. How do I get that? So the obvious thing is services. Services are the most obvious way to start. So what I was doing is I was learning about self-publishing, learning about the new world of book marketing. And then I was offering consulting for like $99 an hour to help other people. So I was just one step ahead in the game, but I was doing that. So I started earning a little bit of money with consulting, and then I started speaking. So I did a professional speaking training and began to do my own workshops. And I was doing this all while still working the day job. So then I was writing books. Obviously, I was publishing my own books. And as I said, because I'm a businesswoman, I never went down the publisher route. I chose the larger percentage of royalties through publishing direct, through Amazon and everything. And then, so the journey basically took 5 years. So 2006 to 2011. I built up the website, the podcast, the book. So I think I had 5 books by the time I left. I was speaking, had all of that. But then we also did a number of things to change. So the moment I said I need to leave my job to my husband, I was making about $1,000 a month. So, which I hope you would agree, you can't live on. I was like, yeah, that's good. It's a good start, but not enough. I need more. So I said to my husband, I need 6 months, but in order to get above 1,000 a month, I need more time. And the only way to get more time is to give up my job. But give me 6 months. And in 6 months, if this is not heading in the right direction, I'll go back to my job. Because most jobs, you can get another job after 6 months. You're not out of the game at all. You still know everything. You know people. So I said 6 months. Also, we downsized. So I know you've downsized significantly as well before. But we sold our house. We sold our investment property. We sold the car, the motorbike, my husband's motorbike. And we moved to a one-bedroom flat. Because the other truth is that I was the main wage earner. So at that point, so I was like, look, we need to cut down our expenses and our risk so that I can do this, because this is going to take a bit of time. And again, Seth Godin talks about this in his book, The Dip, which is, you know, I'm at the top of this career ladder and I want to jump to another career, but you can't jump at that level. You have to take a dip while you now learn this new career. So I guess to cut a long story short, that was 2011 I left. 2015 I hit the same amount of money. So it took there 4 years to get to that level. And my husband at that point left his job as well to join the business. And then now as we talk, I make about 4 times the amount that I ever made in a day job. So I make multi six figures now as a creative entrepreneur. So yeah, it's been, I guess, a journey, but you can see how long that exit took and also the things that you have to do to switch. And now most of my time is scalable. So I write and create things that create scalable income, which is create them once, they make money ongoing. And I have quite a different business model. I'm not doing speaking. I don't do consulting. So I'm asset based rather than time-based. So does that make sense?
It certainly does. And I think that's interesting. You left your job about 10 years after me. And I think that a lot changed in that 10-year period in terms of...
The internet.
Yeah, the internet. I mean, the internet. So I left in 2000. When I bought a laptop, well, it wasn't a laptop, it was a desktop, and connected to the internet in 2000, it was still dial-up. Mm. There was no streaming. There was no social media. So it was basically a very conventional, you were stuck with a very basic conventional business model.
Yeah,
absolutely. My time for money. Mm. Whereas now, of course, that feels very limiting. I mean, it's not that you can't. There are people, you know, I asked recently a group I'm a part of, if you could leave your job and do something you really loved, what would it be? And a lot of the jobs were things that, you know, you do with your hands. You're a gardener, or you're a therapist, or you're so. And it's the actual physical doing of that thing that people really enjoy. But I think that there is this other aspect now that means that, yes, of course, you can go and do a garden. But can you leverage your expertise in some other way so that on a snowy day when there's no gardening to do, you can still be making money?
Yeah, or if you have an injury, or, you know, maybe gardening particularly, or I know a lot of body workers, massage therapists and things, that you know, you can end up injured helping other people. I mean, it's incredible. But this is what's so great about the intellectual property asset model that I want people to really get into their head. Because like a book is not just a book, it's all these multiple streams of income that many people don't realize. And so say you're a gardener, you can write a book about what type of plants might work in a climate change Britain or something. And, or, you know, you could do a series of little books. You could do a podcast interviewing other gardeners or people with amazing gardens. You could do videos on YouTube of going around different garden places. You could do a Patreon thing where people want to hear your tips on particular soil. I don't know. I'm not a gardener, but you know what I mean? I think people, even if you want to do a physical job, then thinking of ways you can turn that into other leveraged, or I call scalable, income is so important, because that's the thing that grows. You know, as we discussed discussed, that you only have a certain amount of time. So if you're, and you can't increase your hourly rate as a gardener exponentially. You just can't. You can't go from, I don't know, $50 an hour to $500 an hour. It's just not going to work. So in order to make more money with less time, you have to think about other things. And that's why my income pretty much grows every year. It's because every year my traffic grows to my website, my listenership grows, the number of books I have grow, the number of people who find those books, it all just expands. And that's, it's almost like a magic business model if you understand it and if you control your rights. And this is the problem I see with many people who signed publishing contracts. As you said, what's quite funny, I think you said something like all you had to do was give a book to an agent and a publisher. But actually, the most important thing to do is read the contract. because
if only I had done that.
Well, exactly.
Actually, maybe you sold some books. I don't know.
Well, that's the thing. Most writers are so grateful to get a contract that they'll sign it without considering what that says. And what most of them say now is they want world English rights for the life of copyright in all formats. That's worldwide everywhere. And I'm like, yeah, they're not going to exploit that. They never will exploit that. Whereas, say, you could have signed, I don't know about your contract, but you could have signed UK Commonwealth print rights. Great, I'd sign that. But then you could self-publish in the rest of the world. You could keep your ebook rights, which is what we all love. You could do your audiobooks. There are lots of ways. So if people listening have signed publishing deals in the past, please go look at your contracts if you can find them. Because it may be that now you could put out an ebook version. If you sign contracts over 10 years ago, it's unlikely that they include ebook rights or even digital audio rights. So that's how J.K. Rowling, for example, has Pottermore, because she didn't sign away her ebook rights. So all the Harry Potter ebooks go through her company. She's probably the most famous independent author in that way, because she's just a juggernaut businesswoman. So these are the things. It's, yes, I'm a creative, I'm an artist, I'm a writer, I'm in my little zone, and then I come out of that zone and I'm a businesswoman, I'm an entrepreneur, which I love both those things. I know it's not for everyone, but...
but I wonder if it is important if you're going to leave corporate world. And I know lots of people who have made that leap and then realized very quickly that their expectations of what that was going to be like are very different to the reality. So they thought that they were, because they were doing well in their career, they thought that as a freelance, for instance, they would be very much in demand, and that they set their day rate, for instance, based on doing 4 days of paid consulting a week.
Oh, and, yeah.
You know, and that, well, why wouldn't I then be able to double or triple my income, because consulting rates are that much higher, freelance rates are higher than having a full-time job. What people don't necessarily think about is, but I need to network, I need to market myself, I need to have maybe a website or some kind of online presence. At the very least, I need people to know what I do and you know, how they can hire me. And often that's not enough. So they often need to carve out a niche, often a niche within a niche, to really differentiate. And this is some of the things that I think you don't have to know before you leave, but you do have to be willing to learn even after you leave. You're going to have to pivot and iterate and adapt and expand and learn as you go.
Yeah, and you have to find that fun. I think this is the real key. You know, you have to find learning fun, because the moment you think you've mastered it, something new comes along. I mean, seriously, you know, with technology, I'm always upskilling and learning new things. I mean, like I said, I've been podcasting for 10 years and I'm doing a podcasting course right now, because I'm like, yeah, my procedures and my tech is 10 years old. I'm looking at the next level. But equally, there was a book called The E-Myth. I don't know if you remember that, years ago. It's still totally relevant, because what that says is you could be the best practitioner possible at whatever, but you need to learn to run a business if you want to do this, whether you want to just make freelance type money, or you want to build a business type money, or you want, you know, startup exit type money, whatever. But I actually wrote another book called Business for Authors because of exactly this reason. It's like, yeah, there are loads of books on craft, but when I put that book out, there were pretty much zero books on how to run a business as an author. And to me, there's no difference between, I used to work for a global mining company, right? My business is exactly the same as that because I have a product, I have customers, I have vendors, I have accounting, I have sales and marketing. And even though mine might be minuscule compared to theirs, the concept of business and the things you need in a business are still the same. But this is the thing, you have to learn all that. Like I said, my degree was in theology. You know, I'm not an accountant, although I worked in accounting departments with systems. And so I've learned all of this. You know, I've never done a degree in writing, for example, and yet I make really good money from books, you know, or publishing or any of that. So you just learn along the way. And, but I think you always have to come back to why, because it is, let's just face it, it's easier to have a day job. It's totally easier. They do all the tax, they do all that stuff. You go in, you have your coffee, you have your breaks, you have your lunches. It's great having a day job, but what do you want to do with your life and what do you want to show for it? And when you're on your deathbed, whenever that is, do you want to look back and feel regret at not doing the things that you love? So this is what was driving me. And yeah, I mean, it doesn't stop as well. You know this, it doesn't stop. I know that if I'm putting things in place now, that means I can have more time off. But my business is built on me, my voice, my writing. So how do I create a sustainable career for the rest of my life? I'm building up those asset bases to protect me. But that's, again, it's fun. I love it. It really is cool.
Yeah. I think I only started becoming an adult, really, when I started running my own business. I do think of my 20s as sort of really an extension of my childhood. And I was doing very responsible jobs. I mean, I was, you know, a producer at the Today program. I was pretty responsible. But in terms of really taking responsibility for how I live, for the money that comes into the household, for how I choose to use my time, and making some very tough decisions about that. I mean, like you've already said, saying no to things that would be lucrative, but take me away from my passion, for instance. These are grown-up decisions, and there's nothing more grown-up than looking at your cash flow and thinking, we run out of money in 3 months' time, or we run out of money at the end of the month. I mean, I've even been in that situation, unless I pull something out the bag. You know, that really grows you up, I think.
Yeah, and I think I'm definitely very financially conservative and have spent a lot of time putting money into. So, for example, one of the things, there's some terrible statistics in Britain around how many self-employed people do not have a pension. I mean, it's a disaster waiting to happen. But from day one, I've always put money into pension. Even at the beginning, I was like, okay, £50 in pension this month. Woohoo! But now, of course, I'm upping my pension. I have ISAs. We have investments now. We have cash in bank account that is emergency cash. Because as you say, when you are in charge of things, you don't necessarily know what next month is gonna be like. And you have to start looking after all of these things. But again, I enjoy that. I enjoy being responsible for the money that comes in. I can, you know, celebrate that I'm getting paid for the things I create, as opposed to a time doing a job I hated. So yeah, you do have to learn these skills, but I would say it's a lot easier now. Like certainly for you 20 years ago, and even me 10 years ago, when the Kindle was just starting out. I mean, it's much easier now for people to make a living online. You know, you can do it to be location independent. I know you've been traveling, and I'm location independent in terms of I can work from anywhere. And yeah, I think you have to sort of look at what the life you want to lead and how your daily life is going to work, and then work towards that slowly. And again, that's a big thing that we've said, say it again, it's not an overnight thing. It's a slow growth, but it's awesome when you get a bit further.
So you've talked a little bit about your income streams, and you're very open about this. It's something I really, really like. So can you just for us break down where the income comes from, so we can understand the percentage that comes from books versus anything else that you might do?
Yeah, so at the moment I make about six figures from book sales alone. And again, but remember, the book sales are based on ebook sales, and I have global. So when you self-publish, when you independently publish, I prefer to say, because I work with so many professionals, you can publish globally. So I've sold books in 86 countries now, which is far more than most traditionally published authors, mainly because publishers don't publish in most countries in the world. So, and also those books are in ebook, they're in paperback, they're in hardback, they're in large print, they're in audiobook editions. Some of them are in translation. I've got a book in Korean, German, Italian, Spanish. So this is the thing, there's the books themselves are multiple streams of income. So in terms of, you know, when I look at my bank account, the money's coming from Amazon and Kobo and Apple and Audible and all the different Ingram who do printing. So that's one big chunk, obviously. Then there are courses. So as I mentioned, I've got a productivity course for authors coming out. I've got courses on how to write a novel, how to write nonfiction, content marketing, that type of thing. So I do courses, and that is often turning my books into other material. So I've stopped speaking so much so that I can be more scalable with my teaching. It's a lot cheaper for people to take an online course. It's better because I don't have to travel to America a lot. So that's it. So courses, affiliate income. So this is a content marketing strategy that I've built up over 10 years of the blog. So your writing doesn't have to just be in a book format. It can be on a website. Now, some people do freelance blogging, so they might get paid for an article. I don't do that. I put my articles on my own website in order to generate traffic. So my website, so I don't publish anyone. I don't do marketing for anyone. I don't help anyone with the writing or publishing or marketing, but my website has got everything you need for free. Basically, you can find everything out for free on my website. But as you go through that, you might find a tutorial on how to build your website, for example, or a tutorial on how to use Vellum to format your book. And each of those, I'll say, if you want to buy this through my link, then here's my link. So that's affiliate marketing and affiliate commission, which is I get a percentage of a sale if you buy through my link. And I'm completely honest and open about my link, so it's really obvious. And a lot of people will email me and say, hey, I want to buy this. I heard about it from you. What's your link? So people are amazing. They understand how we make a living in different ways. So affiliate income is now a big chunk of my money, because as my traffic grows, so I have around 700,000 uniques per month on my site. And so the affiliate income is based on clicks, which is based on traffic. So that's big. What else? Oh, yes, I have a podcast, the Creative Pen podcast, if people want to come over. It's at 400 plus episodes now. And I have corporate sponsorship for that, because it gets about 15,000 downloads per show. And then, of course, people come and download bits and bobs over time. So that I have corporate sponsorship. I also have Patreon, which is an emerging model for creatives, which is recurring income. So someone who enjoys the podcast might put a dollar in per month or a couple of dollars per month to support me doing the podcast. And you get extra stuff. I do extra audio every month. So between the Patreon and the corporate sponsorship, the podcast now makes a good chunk of money as well. So and then last year I was speaking, but I don't really count speaking anymore, and I don't do consulting anymore. So yeah, that's pretty much it. So for me, book sales, affiliate income, courses, and the podcast.
That's amazing. And we talked before about how hard you work. I mean, even just creating a podcast is quite time consuming. I know that you outsource it these days. You outsource a lot of that. So that seems to be one of the ways that you manage such a diverse range of activities in any particular day, plus setting aside time to just be purely creative. So at what point did you start saying, okay, now I have to start bringing people other in? Because there's a cost associated with that.
Yeah, well, it's similar. It's more of a feeling, and everyone knows when they get to this point. And it's kind of like when I left the job, I was like, I cannot do any more with the time I have. So how do I make more time? And so that was a big jump to obviously going full time. But then, oh, since then, so it was around 2014, I got a virtual assistant to help me with. So she does things like running guest posts on the Creative Pen. She formats the transcripts of my podcast. And this is a bit of a tip for SEO, so search engine optimization. The best thing to do with a podcast is get it transcribed, because audio is not indexable or searchable at the moment on Google. I'm sure it will come at some point, but people can't find audio if they're Googling, or maybe they're asking Alexa or whatever, and then if you have words associated with your audio, people will find it much more easily. So I outsourced the transcription. So what would that have been? About 4 or 5 years in, I started outsourcing the podcast stuff. About 3 years ago, I started outsourcing the editing, because as you know, the interview's edited, but I also do an introduction. I do, you know, then there's the music, the intro, outro stuff. So now that goes to an audio producer. I outsource my video editing for YouTube. What else? And I'm about to outsource the inbox associated with my website, because I get a lot of people just emailing, how do I publish a book? And to be fair, you can find that out quite easily on my website. So I just need someone to reply politely to a lot of those emails, because that doesn't need to be me replying with go to this link, this link, this link. So, and obviously I'm still there as well for more personal stuff, like you and me emailing, I'll still be there, but they will deal with that. So over time, I've carved out the things. Obviously, I work with editors, I work with freelance book cover designers, I have someone to help me with the tech side, but everything that I outsource, I used to do myself. So it is about the feeling of, I need more time, how much am I willing to pay for this? Then it's about finding someone you can outsource that to. And is it worth the trade-off? So for example, if it cost me $40 Canadian an hour for my virtual assistant, and she is so worth it. And we've been working together now for, 5 years, and she's amazing. And she's like, she understands the business. She came from my audience. So this is a really big deal. Alexandra, her name is. If you need someone and you have a podcast, just ask on your podcast or your email list, I'm looking for someone to help me with this. And chances are there's someone who already knows you who might be interested in that. So that's that feeling. But in terms of that justification, so here's another tip. So you're starting your business and you're like, I hate social media, I'm just going to hire someone to do that for me. That's not going to work, because if you don't understand something yourself, you're going to be paying, you know, way too much money for something that you might not even have to do at all. So this is a really important point, is to really think about what you need. Actually, the first person I hired was a bookkeeper, because, hey, who wants to do your own bookkeeping? So these are the things. It's like you have to make the decision, but it's tough, but it will be worth it, because then you get to spend more time doing the stuff that brings you alive, which is the point.
Yes, exactly. And I'm thinking back, I probably did. I mean, our paths have been so similar. I probably did the same thing. So I had a virtual assistant and a bookkeeper were my first two outsourced people. I can't remember in which order. And now I have a variety of other people as well, helping more on the technical side. But I think that the point you make is very good, which is don't outsource it because you don't understand it. I mean, you may not have the technical skill. I have a very, very skilled accountant. There's no way that I could do what he does. Mm. But I've learned the hard way that if you don't understand the money in your business, you will either go bust or nearly go bust.
So, oh, yeah. Definitely.
So actually understanding and knowing at least the basic principles of those things, because you've had to raise an invoice, because you've had to chase payments, because you've had to balance the bank account, is absolutely critical. And don't waste a lot of your very valuable time doing something that someone else is highly skilled at and can do it far more quickly and cheaply. I mean, I really learned once, I tried to cut back and use my virtual assistant less by booking my own travel. And I ended up with a train ticket for the wrong day because I'm an idiot at booking my own travel. And I thought, you know, that having this wrong ticket and then having to buy another ticket because this one is useless to me has cost me £100. That they could have booked a train for me in 10 minutes.
Well, and that's a really good example because I'm listening to you going, I love booking my own travel. That's one of the things I love doing. But I have a cleaner and, you know, we're in quite a small flat. We're like a 2-bedroom flat. And it's funny because people go, you have a cleaner in your tiny flat? What is going on? I'm like, yeah, like I'd rather pay someone to do that for me. And then there's no marital disharmony as well, because neither my husband and I or I want to do the cleaning. So it's funny because that's another good example of stuff that can free up your time, but also mental headspace. And that's also so important. Like why I do this, the overarching life principle is freedom. Freedom to spend my time doing what I want to do, and freedom to travel whenever I like, and freedom to spend my money on what I like when I like. And, you know, that to me is why you hire people, you know, over time, because you're freeing up more physical time, but also headspace. So you can think about cool things instead.
I think this has been so useful for people to kind of get a picture of not what the dream, the fantasy is, but the reality, and that the reality of running a business as a writer is so, has in it not just the creativity of writing the book, but all the other creative problem solving. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if that's one of the reasons that it works so well for you, that you get this outlet of creativity, you know, in a vast spectrum of different activities.
Oh yeah, this is the perfect job for me. And as I said, it's not for everyone. I know plenty of authors who do not want to do and do not want to learn the things that I have learned. And it doesn't turn them on to be in business. But I presume people listening to your show are also interested in running their own business. So that's the difference. But again, it always just comes back to, what do you want your life to look like? What do you want to achieve? What body of work do you want to create in your lifetime? And how can you do that and still have a good time, I guess?
So if people are overwhelmed, you know, you're talking about a 10-year, nearly 10-year, more actually, sort of process to get you where you are today. If they're a bit overwhelmed by that and they're thinking, okay, I'm at this crossroads, I know that I don't want to carry on working the way I work now. I definitely want to make a living writing. What are the first couple of vital steps that they should be taking?
Well, of course, I have a book called How to Make a Living with Your Writing. Nice segue. So that might be useful. But if you want something for free, come over to The Creative Pen, and I have lots and lots of stuff, and you can learn about all of this in more detail. But in terms of like the first step, as we said, finish your book if you're writing your book. But the other thing I did is really design a future business. So when I actually thought about leaving my job, I just did a one pager, you know, like ideas of how I would make money. And some of that was immediate money, some of that was long-term money, so that I knew where I was going. And I think that's also important. Many people just start writing a book without a clue where they're going. And that's how years later they can end up wondering what happened. A bit like how my first job happened, you know. So that would be some things. But also, if you can make $10 online or £10, I do everything in US dollars because most people are happy buying stuff in US dollars. So if you can make $10 online, you can probably make $100 and then $1,000 and then do that every day. And that's kind of the other mindset shift, because online business is scalable. So if I do a book, so I sell my books direct as well through my website. So if I have a book that's sort of $7.99, and I can sell one of those to someone who doesn't know me, then maybe I can do that again tomorrow, and maybe I can do that again, and then maybe I write another one, and then it's $15. So this is what you've got to think: how do I make that first $10? Like, literally. And that first $10 you make, you'll be blown away. I mean, I remember my first Amazon payment, it was about $15. And I was so chuffed. I was like, I just made $15. Yay. And now, of course, I'd be very disappointed with a $15 day. So, you know, that's kind of the growth. But yeah, if you can make $10, you know, go for it.
My mind is whirring. I mean, I'm sure other people's is too, but just this, I love the idea that it's not about landing the £30,000 publishing deal, for instance. It's about, can I do it a small thing, volume? And I'm sure that, you know, I remember the first time I landed a client, that money that you get the first time, you've made money doing a thing that you had an idea that was your idea. I can make money doing this thing. The first time someone pays you, there's nothing like it.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I wouldn't say no to 30 grand or 200 grand or whatever movie deal money, but you can't base a business on lightning strikes. So I base my business on small, consistent income every day, you know, every hour now. It's awesome. And then, yeah, sure, I'd love some of those lightning strikes, but I think they're more likely to come the more books you write, for example. So yeah, I'm all for both.
Joanna, it's been so good talking to you. And I highly recommend for people to head over to your website. It's absolutely packed with stuff that they can access for free. If they're ready for the next level, courses they can take, books they can buy. And I'm so impressed by, in a sense, how generous you are. I mean, of course, it's your business to share your knowledge with the world, but just how generous you are about the detail of how to make it happen. So thank you so much for talking to me today.
Oh, thanks for having me on the show, Blair.
I hope you found that useful, whatever it is you want to do, particularly, of course, if you want to write. But I think that there's so much in there. I was madly scribbling down ideas as she was talking. Her website is the place to go for all the resources she's created. That's thecreativepen.com, pen with a double N. I'll put the link in the show notes, so do check that out. You can buy her books on her site, you can sign up to one of her courses, you can find tons of free advice and resources to help you get your writing career going. So don't hesitate, head over there straight away if you want to write for a living. If you want to absolutely guarantee that you aren't getting in your own way, sign up to A Brilliant Gamble online. This is a self-paced program. You go through the materials at your own pace, in your own time, although I imagine it'll take you between 9 months and 12 months to really complete not just the exercises, but the actions that fall out of those exercises. If you get started now, this time next year, you could be doing what you love for a living. You could have left your job, you could have started your own business, or whatever it is that you have in mind that you would love to do. And you will have found a way as a result of the program to design all of that so that you can incorporate into your life not just your work, but other things that matter to you too. With all the information about that and how to stay in touch with us here at A Brilliant Gamble, here's the lovely Ivy Palmer.
We'd love to hear from you. Visit our website at www.abrilliantgamble.com. There you can get all the episodes of this show, plus read the blog. And on our coaching and classes page, you can find out more about the Brilliant Gamble personal development programs to help you navigate your way through the minefield of life, career and change. You can also follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Brilliant Gamble and on our Brilliant Gamble Facebook page. Finally, please leave a review and star rating for this podcast on iTunes, as it helps people find us and take A Brilliant Gamble.